of the Glazers Union versus Gibson. Mr. Gibson?
Good morning, Your Honors. Pete Gibson on behalf of the appellant. This case involves another jurisdictional dispute between the Glazers Union and the Ironworkers Union over work performed at the Cermak Elementary School, where I, as the employer, assigned the work to the Ironworkers. The district court found in its summary decision that the Glazers bargaining unit included all employees performing work covered under the collective bargaining agreement, which was incorrect, and that the contribution requirements under ERISA, enforceable under ERISA 515, required contributions on behalf of all employees performing work covered under the collective bargaining agreement. But clearly, Articles 18 of the Glazers collective bargaining agreement states that the employer shall pay a certain rate for each hour worked by journeyperson and apprentice Glazers into the health and welfare trust fund, and likewise into the pension fund under Article 18, Sections 1 and 2. What the funds did is they cited a profusion of cases that had no relevance whatsoever to this case, because the only reasonable interpretation of that is that the Ironworkers were not Glazers. Therefore, Glassmasters, or myself, is not required to pay pension and welfare contributions on behalf of the Ironworkers, who were not members of the Glazers Union. Furthermore, the collective bargaining agreement states that the membership in good standing to the union is a requirement and a condition of employment. None of the Ironworkers were members of the Glazers Union, nor were ever members of the Glazers Union. Furthermore, it'd be a blatant violation under 29 U.S.C. 186 to force the employer, me in this case, to pay contributions on behalf of the Ironworkers, because those Ironworkers were not includable to receive benefits under the Glazers health and welfare trust documents and pension documents. In fact, they are not permitted to participate in the plan. Unfortunately, most of this argument wasn't brought up in the district court, because the defendant in this case never had an opportunity to argue this. It was not argued by the plaintiffs until their reply brief.
Did you have a lawyer in the district?
No, I did not.
You represented yourself.
I could not afford one. This case was brought against...
How much are they asking? Or how much?
$10,000 minimum. Oh, how much is the pension fund asking?
Right.
$146,000.
How many employees do you have?
Glassmasters is no longer operating in business.
Oh, really?
No. Well, the economy just, killed us. We forced to dissolve the company, but they're still coming after me personally for this money, which I don't have, unfortunately. Wished I did. But clearly, all the cases cited by the plaintiffs were based on provisions in their respective collective bargaining agreements, which included all employees performing work covered under the agreement. That is not the case here. On the other cases cited, such as Myron and Hutter and Schmidt, included violations of the collective bargaining agreement clause regarding subcontracting. We did not subcontract on any of this work. Therefore, all those cases are irrelevant. There's only one reasonable interpretation of the clause regarding contributions, requiring contributions of Glassmasters, is that they were for each hour worked by journeyperson Glazers and apprentice Glazers. These are not Ironworkers. Therefore, Glassmasters does not, or myself, does not owe any money based on the ironworkers. The ironworkers' pension and health and welfare benefits were paid into the ironworkers' funds pursuant to a collective bargaining agreement that I had with the ironworkers also at that time. And clearly, all of the work performed by the ironworkers was covered under the ironworkers' collective bargaining agreement. That's not disputed in this case. What is disputed in this case is the only reasonable interpretation of the contract, which requires benefits under the Glazers' collective bargaining agreement. And simply speaking, anything else by the third-party funds is not enforceable under the agreement. Whether Glassmasters agreed to assign work covered under the agreement to the Glazers, it was a mutual agreement between Glassmasters and the Glazers Union. The Glazers Union are not party to this lawsuit. This is a suit brought under ERISA 515 for contributions only, pay in lieu of work dispute. There is no dispute here in this case because the plaintiffs, the pension funds, have no business arguing whether the work should have been awarded to the ironworkers or should have been awarded to the Glazers. In fact, it was awarded to the ironworkers properly because all of the work covered under the ironworkers agreement was work that was being performed on the job site. And other than that, that's all I have.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Gibson. Mr. McDowell?
May it please the court, my name is Stu McDowell. I represent the trustees of the Glazers 27 Welfare and Pension Funds. Basically, it's our position that Judge Leinweber appropriately determined that Glassmasters was bound to make contributions to the Glazers funds for all employees who perform covered work requiring payment of such contributions under the collective bargaining agreement. Mr. Gibson has dwelt to a large extent upon the argument that the contract is limited solely to members of the Glazers Union. Although we raised some questions in the brief regarding a waiver and we would still adhere to those positions, going to the merits of this matter, because a limitation to union members would violate the Labor Management Relations Act Section 8A3. Under this court's decision in the Joe McClellan case, which applied the Supreme Court decision in Walsh versus Schleck, contract terms should not be viewed as illegally limited to union members if the collective bargaining agreement's wording lends itself to a logically acceptable construction, rendering the contract both legal and enforceable. If you go through the various provisions, particularly those regarding union recognition, which Mr. Gibson addressed in his argument, Article 1, Section 1, referring to Glazer and apprentice Glazer employees, which has very similar language in Article 18, I believe, dealing with fringe benefit contributions, parenthetically defines that term as those employees performing work of the type set forth in Article 6 of the agreement, which is the jurisdictional work provision, and in the area set forth in Article 8 of the agreement, which is the geographic jurisdiction. It does not define the term on the basis of union membership. Mr. Gibson then also refers to Article 1, Section 3 of the agreement. However, that agreement regarding that section of the agreement regarding union security actually supports the position of the Glazers Fund. What is required is membership of persons performing work covered by the agreement. What this establishes, in essence, is that the group of employees covered by the agreement is broader than union members, because there would be no purpose in requiring union membership if the scope of the collective bargaining unit only applied to union members.
What did the judge mean when he said, you quote this on page 4 of your brief, it's unfortunate that Glassmasters has apparently become obligated to contribute to the funds of both unions for the disputed work. Then it says, there's only itself to blame because it entered into collective bargaining agreements with two unions, apparently having jurisdiction to perform glazing work, without designating in the collective bargaining agreements which union was to perform the work.
I believe what he refers to here is if we look at the history of the collective bargaining process, which is detailed in the summary judgment proceedings, originally Glassmasters was bound to a collective bargaining agreement with the Glazers, which covered basically all glazing work in the geographic jurisdiction of the union. Subsequent to entry in that collective bargaining agreement, I believe in 1997, Glassmasters then bound itself to an ironworkers agreement, which covered some of the same work jurisdiction in the same area. Then when the original Glazers agreement ran out, I believe in 1998, Glassmasters again entered into a new Glazers collective bargaining agreement, again involving contribution obligations for the same work involved. And so basically what we have is a situation where the work was originally assigned to the Glazers pursuant to the Glazers collective bargaining agreement. Fringe benefit contributions were required. Then rather than terminate the Glazers collective bargaining agreement, Glassmasters entered into the ironworkers collective bargaining agreement and therefore basically became liable under the terms of both agreements should they be enforced by either fund, possibly to make contributions to each fund for the same work performed by particular Glassmaster employees. And as indicated in Judge Leinenweber's decision, there was not any...
That's a bizarre result, though, isn't it? So he's paying double.
Well, basically, I think when we approach this from an equitable perspective, again, we have to look at the situation that there was a binding agreement that contributions be made to the Glazers Fund for all glazing work. We're an employer simply by entry into a second collective bargaining agreement able to avoid the contributions under the first collective bargaining agreement, say that he found that the contribution rate was too high. The first collective bargaining agreement would basically have no significance or no weight, and so that brings up the caveat that Judge Leinenweber brought up as to if there would need to be some basis upon which work would be designated perhaps to one union rather than another. But if one binds itself to two collective bargaining agreements with different unions for the same work, basically, once again, it's the responsibility of the employer who enters these agreements.
But it is a windfall for you because apparently the Glazers weren't doing this work.
Well, yes and no. The problem is, from the point of view of the fringe benefit funds under the Gerber Truck decision, technically we would be liable as a defined benefit plan for every hour worked under a collective bargaining agreement, irrespective of the union membership of the person who performed the work, and irrespective of the fact that contributions might have been made to another fringe benefit fund. So at least particularly from
the
point
of... the two fringe benefit funds would... have to get together and decide, you know, who would keep the money, right? If Glazers did the work, you'd keep the money, and if ironworkers did the work, they'd keep the fringe benefit money. Wouldn't that be sensible?
Reciprocity agreements of that type are sometimes utilized and so forth, but once again, basically looking at it simply from the point of view of the fringe benefit funds under the Gerber Truck case and like, we're entitled to enforce the collective bargaining agreements as they speak.
Yeah, but if you enforce it and the ironworkers enforce it, there's double recovery.
There's not double recovery. What there is basically two sets of benefits are paid for the same work.
Well, I would call that double recovery,
well,
right?
Well,
so instead of, you know, $100 a month per worker, $200.
Yes, but basically, once again, I think that goes back to what Judge Leinenweber said in his decision. The fault is basically of the employer, and so the question is, where should the responsibility lie? In this case, the employer entered into collective bargaining agreements basically requiring payment for the same contributions to two different funds, and particularly in light of the fund's possible obligation, particularly under the pension provision, to make good for those hours worked, the funds basically have a duty to attempt to recover under these provisions. Now, perhaps the different unions in their collective bargaining agreements with Glassmasters could work out as to, you know, who should make contributions and who shouldn't, because benefit funds can only enforce collective bargaining provisions in accordance with the specific terms of those provisions. But so long as the provisions are unlimited, as they are in this case, the funds have an obligation, basically, to attempt to enforce those agreements.
Well, that's what happens ordinarily if you're in a pickle like this, is you ask the union to try to work it out. You know, who's going to get the work on this particular job? Could go to Glazers, could go to Ironworkers. You have two agreements. So you guys work it out.
Yes, and basically this kind of goes to another point with respect to the record of this case. In this case, there was no attempt to limit either agreement. Basically, Glassmasters had an agreement with the Glazers, then enters an agreement with the Ironworkers, simply on a self-help basis, reassigns all the work to the Ironworkers, and there pretty much was no negotiation process with the Glazers over this point, and there was no jurisdictional dispute which was filed at the time of the summary judgment proceedings, which might have provided perhaps some light as to who should recover, although, you know, the issue as to jurisdictional dispute proceedings and their applicability to fringe benefit cases is an issue that really has not been fully resolved.
Okay, thank you, Mr. McDowell. Mr. Gibson, do you wish to respond? How much time does he have? 3 minutes?
First of all, I'd like to state for the record that in Gerber Truck, the pension funds actually did provide coverage for the employees in dispute. Here in this case, the Glazer Fund, they have no intentions whatsoever of providing any kind of coverage for the iron workers. They say they claim that they are obligated to provide coverage for the iron workers, but under the trust documents, they are prohibited from doing so. Under the trust documents that regulate how they maintain the pension and health and welfare funds, they are not allowed to allow the iron workers to participate in the fund. So yes, there is a huge windfall that's created for them because they're going to and seek to collect this money without ever providing any contributions whatsoever or any kind of coverage or pension coverage for the iron workers whatsoever, which is a issue that they didn't address under 29 U.S.C. 186 that says that any pension fund who collects payments on behalf of an employee must collect these benefits on the sole purpose of providing coverage for these employees. They don't have no intentions of providing coverage for these employees. Where they intend to put the money, I don't know, but it's not to provide coverage for the iron workers. Secondly, the iron workers' collective bargaining agreement actually, per hour, cost me more than the Glazers. They were better workers. They did the work more efficient in less time than the Glazers. Therefore, it was an economical decision for Glassmasters to assign the work to the ironworkers in lieu of the Glazers because simply they did the work better. So, and thirdly, they cite Gerber Truck. In Gerber Truck, the collective bargaining agreement required contributions on behalf of all employees performing work covered by the collective bargaining agreement. That's not the case here. The case is here is for apprentice glazers and journeyperson glazers performing work covered under not even performing work. It doesn't even mention whatsoever what kind of work they perform. We have to make benefits for each glazer, for each hour worked by each glazer and each apprentice glazer. That we did because at the point in time when we were first entered into both collective bargaining agreements, we carried both glazers and iron workers. So all the benefits that were due Glazers, we paid. All the benefits that were due ironworkers.
When did you renew your collective bargaining agreement with the Glazers after you made an agreement with the ironworkers?
Well, I still had regular Glazers that were on the payroll, which I considered.
So you were still using some Glazers.
We were still using some Glazers. Not as many as they liked. But we were still using sun glazer. Actually, myself was a glazer.
Pardon?
I myself was a glazer. And I paid benefits on behalf of myself into the contributions. I mean, into the pension and health and welfare funds. So on behalf of my own family, you know, I wish to continue to do so.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Gibson. And you did a good argument. Many of the professional lawyers who appear before us.
I appreciate that, Your Honor.
And thank you, Mr. McDonald.
Thank you. Have a good day.